Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Pay and Proxy podcast. I'm Meredith Irvine, and I'm a senior editor of compensationstandards.com and thecorporatecouncil.net. And I am here virtually today with Maj Vasegi, Betty Huber, and Mark Borges. And Maj and Betty are partners at Latham & Watkins. Maj is the vice chair of the firm's public company and board representation practice. And Betty is co-chair of the firm's environmental, social, and governance practice. And Mark Borges is a principal at Compensia and, of course, an editor here at compensationstandards.com. Welcome. So they are here to discuss a number of recent developments, particularly since the new administration has taken office, that have caused public companies to rethink their diversity disclosures in both their 10-Ks and their proxy statements. Calendar year-end companies are working right now to finalize 10-Ks. Some have already been filed, and then are moving quickly on to their proxy statements. So first, for the three of you, I wondered if you could just start by bringing us up to speed on the latest developments in this area.
Great, yeah. Thanks a lot, Meredith. This is Betty speaking. I guess since the beginning of the Biden administration, there have been a variety of cases in the diversity, equity, inclusion area that has led to where we are today. And so the first one, as many of you know about, this kind of like Harvard affirmative action case where the Supreme Court kind of took down the ability for, I guess, universities to get federal funding from the government to take race and ethnicity into account in admissions decisions. And that's under Title VI of the Equal Protection Act. And the idea is that if they get federal funding, they ought not be doing that. There were some more cases that kind of went into where we are, with respect to private companies or, publicly traded companies, but in the private sector. And there's something called Section 1981 of the Civil Rights Act, which prohibits the use of race or ethnicity in private contracting. And so none of this was new at all. It's just, law in the books. And some other decisions in the Title VII area, which bring gender, religion, and LGBTQ status into the fore. But with the recent executive orders from the new federal administration, I think that's when everyone took notice and said, okay, what do we need to do? And of course, this is timed exactly during 10K season, where companies are actively working on their disclosures and wondering, what do we need to do now? And so prior to all of these cases that I mentioned, there's been a lot of diversity disclosure coming into 10Ks and proxies and other public facing documents due to, certain cultural events that have happened in the United States. That's what companies are looking at now. And the way that companies ought to be thinking about it is really just from a risk standpoint and being very clear in their heads, let's not confuse political risk with legal risk. Like, what is illegal and what is not illegal? Or what is legal, but then also the talent risk, how employees are going to be thinking about this. How about business risk? How are our customers going to be thinking about this? And so, disclosures are very important because there are so many different people who consume those disclosures. And so this is just a really exciting time now in a way to be thinking about how do we put our best foot forward for all of the different constituencies who, consume our disclosures. And maybe with that background, we can talk about diversity metrics and comp programs and see how companies are thinking about that.
Well, certainly, I think one of the big things that this has all resulted in is sort of a reevaluation, I guess in 2 points, a reevaluation of how DEI fits into your executive compensation program and the extent to which you are going to come up with one or more specific metrics that you will then use typically in your short-term incentive plan. I think if you read some of the literature that's been out there, the general consensus is that DEI should have been or should be considered in all of your incentive programs. But for the most part, historically now, it's been in the annual bonus plan and to a lesser extent in the long-term incentive plans. And I guess maybe even using the term DEI is a little inaccurate because it's really the focus has been on ESG, of which this is one component, albeit one that, as Betty said, has had certain cultural implications, which have kind of brought it to the forefront, and which for a lot of companies has been an area where in looking at their ESG philosophy or their ESG strategy, they have focused on some of the issues around diversity and inclusion as being ones that are important to the organization And from a practical standpoint, things that are capable of being measured in a way that allows them to fit into the overall framework or structure of how incentive compensation programs are designed.
Thanks, Mark. And so the question that sometimes we are getting or recently are getting is we have a DEI target in our incentive program for 2024. Do I need to disclose that? So that is a very basic question that we're getting. And the answer really is it comes down to materiality. Is that diversity goal, was it a material performance measure under your incentive program? Generally speaking, performance measures under executive programs have been considered to be material. But at the same time, it does depend on the weighing and the impact of that measure. So for example, if you have a very low weighted measure, or the measure doesn't even have its own weighting, it's part of a scorecard and there's subjectivity involved in how it's assessed, then I think there is potential for a company to take the position that that specific goal is not material and doesn't require disclosure. At the same time, you know, our experience is that historically, the SEC really has been much more focused on quantifying. They want to see those historical financial goals quantified. They have been a bit more lenient on these sorts of operational or more strategic goals. So we think there is some room there, but it definitely requires analysis. The other question that we've been getting, especially for clients that are government contractors, is we haven't paid out our 2024 bonus yet. Do we pay it out the way we have before, including the, you know, capturing the diversity metric? Or given that we're a government contractor, can we revise it and rejigger our bonus program and not include that diversity metric and attainment with respect to that metric when we're determining bonus payouts? And I think the answer to that is it really depends on your bonus program. If you have very specific goals and weighings that you've communicated to employees, you may actually not be able to change it at this point. But if your bonus program is discretionary and there's more room there and they were really just more guidelines, then maybe you do have some room to maneuver and change things around, especially if you're a government contractor.
We've gotten a number of questions, but I suspect Maj and Betty and their colleagues are getting more since the people are turning to their attorneys to try to figure out how to deal with this, because this is a subset of the broader question about, do we have a formal DEI policy and what are we going to do with that now in light of the executive orders that have been issued and the potential, I guess, for civil and maybe even criminal proceedings being brought against some companies if they are found to have violated civil rights laws and other things. From a very practical standpoint, as somebody who works mechanically with the disclosure, I kind of ask two questions, kind of to follow up and drill down a little bit more on what Maj is saying. The first one is, have you paid out your incentive or not? Because the issues, I think, are slightly different depending upon which bucket you fall into. If you've already paid it out, I think it becomes a bit more difficult to do anything other than satisfy the item 402 disclosure requirements, which are to describe how your incentive compensation arrangements work, what the results were, and then how that affected the particular payout. Matt said something which I think is very important, and that is if you've been doing this now for a few years, consistency may be important. If you've indicated that we've disclosed all this information previously, and now all of a sudden we're taking the position that it's not material, that may work, but at the same time, there's a certain element of risk associated with that. So what I've been telling people is what's done is done. If you're still at a point where you're preparing your proxy, I think you can say something to the effect that this was all done on the basis of what we understood at the beginning of 24 and the environment that existed in January when the comp committee was making these decisions. And for purposes of what we're going to be doing going forward, it's all going to be consistent with how we address our larger issues around DEI. The other situation, of course, is where you haven't paid. And that, again, I mean, materiality is the overriding umbrella, but there are two possible answers here, I think. One is your disclosure or is your program design hardwired, or is it discretionary? If it's hardwired, I think at this stage, it may be very difficult to change that. It's not clear, but given what we've seen recently from ISS and perhaps the thinking of the other major proxy advisory firms, I would be worried that if you were to all of a sudden change your program and get rid of that metric, you've got potentially an in-flight adjustment to your program, which, of course, as most of you know, presents its own set of problems. And even if you didn't, you've got the talent issue. How happy are your executives going to be that 100% or that 10% or 15% of their bonus is no longer payable because you're no longer looking at that particular metric? So I think if it's hardwired, I think the best approach is go ahead and pay out as provided by the results of your program. And be sure to, in your disclosure, to indicate that, you know, this was being done in an environment that's different from the environment that we're in now, and integrate in anything that you're probably saying elsewhere in your proxy statement about what your philosophy, policy, or changes may be around how you look at DEI. On the other hand, if it is discretionary, as Madge said, I think you have a lot more leeway as to what you do, depending upon how much you've disclosed publicly and how much you've told your executives. Their performance is going to be evaluated on these, on particular metrics, and not just a general feeling or review of overall performance of the company in the DEI area by the compensation committee. Here, I think that you probably have a little bit more leeway, but the two things that I would worry about are, one, is what we're doing consistent with what we're doing at the higher level on responding to DEI generally, because you don't want to be inconsistent with that. And then the second thing, of course, is this issue with your executives. What are you going to do if all of a sudden you've decided that, well, we're not going to be looking at what you thought was 10% of your bonus or a huge chunk of perhaps a long-term incentive compensation award? So I think you need to get together with your attorneys to kind of hash those things out before you move forward. But I think in terms of where people find themselves now, that's pretty much, those are the different scenarios that I think I've had presented to me and that I think most companies are facing in one form or another.
And it really, I mean, we're talking about bonus targets and bonus programs, but it goes beyond that, right, Betty? So a lot of our clients right now, the past few weeks, are struggling with their human capital management disclosures in their Form 10Ks. And so I would be curious what you're seeing in that area.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks a lot. And I agree completely with everything that Mark and Madge have said so far. So really just focusing on the 10K, which, you know, is probably the most immediate concern and most burning concern at this moment. So the human capital management section, you know, there is a, you know, sort of line item disclosure requirement in regulation SK item 101 that requires companies, you know, roughly speaking, to disclose how they attract, retain, and develop talent. There's no, the word diversity or equity or inclusion is not in that regulation SK item. However, you know, all of the things that I mentioned in the beginning at the top of this program have caused a lot of that language to creep in because, yes, for many companies, especially in depending on their industry, whether it's professional services or otherwise, in order to attract, retain, and develop talent, there are programs that relate to, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion. Peer practice also influences, as everyone knows. You take a look and see what your peers are saying to make sure you're in lockstep with others and not just like an outlier. So that's how we've gotten to this point where if you take a look at 10Ks that were filed last year, there's a lot of this language. So to Maj's question and good question, what are people doing right now? And certainly if there's some real high risk, and I'm not saying that there's any at all like illegal DEI activity, but you know, if that is a risk and that's something that a company's thinking about, they're probably going to look really closely and really, you know, toughly at this disclosure. If you're just a run-of-the-mill company that has some of this in there, whether it was, you know, the cultural thing to do, there's some, for lack of a better word, like rebranding of language. And so maybe not using that acronym, not using any of the individual words I mentioned. We're seeing a lot of like inclusion and belonging coming in because that really does cover all the things we just talked about. What is the point of all of this? And it's the talent thing. We want everyone to feel included. That leads to better financial outcomes, which is really, you know, a good part of why we're talking about this at all. Everyone wants to feel like they belong, so they bring their best themselves forward into the job, and therefore that's good for the bottom line. So that's the type of language we're seeing. We're also seeing, I guess, you know, kind of related to Madge's question, the common question we're getting is like, if I'm listed in NASDAQ and I've had the, you know, board diversity matrix in there, do I need to do that? And the answer is, it depends. I literally just got off of a call right before this one where the client said, you know, we're going to keep it in there. Because we've done the math and we realize that, in fact, like, we don't really, really want anyone to run a black line. See that came out. That's not the main reason, but that's one. Number two, our employees care about that. Number three, we care about what Glass Lewis thinks about. And heretofore, unless things change by the time this gets, you know, published, you know, their policy sort of still remains about like having some disclosures in there to help them make their voting recommendations on board directors. They don't think that they're high risk. At this point, they don't think they have any kind of like so-called illegal or even questionable programs. So they're like, we want to put this out there because at some point in time, there are constituents that find this information helpful. So there's that. We've got a lot who are just stripping it out. And then they're going to say, because this is no longer law and it's no longer required. So none of this is, there's no one size fits all today. And, you know, that one size fits all, even if it existed, may change tomorrow.
Just to mention, so just this past Tuesday, ISS did change their policy and say that they're indefinitely halting consideration of diversity factors in making vote recommendations with respect to directors. So Glass Lewis has not yet. So Glass Lewis's policy as of today is still to recommend against the chair of the nominating committee if there's fewer than one director from an underrepresented community. And that is based on proxy statement self-identified demographic information. So it would be interesting to see if Glass Lewis also takes a similar approach. But, you know, we have over the years between 2024 and 2025 seen a little bit of a watering down of policies from investors, right, Betty?
Yep, that's right. Exactly. Yeah. So without like naming any of them, you know, a lot of them have kind of toned down from last year to this year. And it makes sense in a way, if you think about it. Yeah, ISS, you know, their customers are investors. And so if the community is moving towards that, of course, ISS, you know, it makes sense. And in the prefatory language, so just to be clear for those listening, today is Valentine's Day, February 14th, in case you're listening later and things have changed. But it just came out at ISS on February 11th. And if you read their statement, it's short. So, you know, I commend those to read it. They simply say, yeah, well, you know, investors are changing their policies and therefore we probably ought to as well. So here you go.
And they make it prospectively applicable too. So it's, you know, it's very obvious that they're dealing with a changing situation and are trying to be responsive to that. One thing I want to make sure I don't forget to mention, and that is, you know, while I tend to focus more on the executive comp section of the proxy statement, as I'm sure Betty knows, the entire thing is an integrated document that ought to look like an integrated document. And there are a couple of areas in the proxy statement outside of executive comp disclosure where there is potential impact from what we're talking about. One, of course, is the move that companies have made purely on a voluntary basis to include a summary of their ESG policies in their proxy statement. So in addition to what Maj focused on with your human capital management disclosure in your 10K, that is something that I would stress you want to make sure that it's consistent with what you're saying in your 10K, as well as consistent with anything you may be saying around your incentive compensation arrangements, if in fact you are making some changes to what would otherwise have been expected to operate under the plan. And then finally, one thing that I don't generally focus on, I leave it to people like Maj and Betty to deal with this, is that in the discussion of your board committees, one of the things that the Nominating and Governance Committee is required to do under item 407 of SK is to discuss the extent to which diversity is taken into account in determining nominees for the board of directors. That's still on the books. So even though you might be looking to minimize the use of buzzwords or what you say about DEI as it relates to your exec comp program, don't forget that you've got a specific requirement there that you need to attend to. And there's a CNDI which sort of amplifies what is covered by that. and make sure that you've coordinated your disclosure in that area to one, be consistent with whatever actions, if any, the company is taking to kind of reevaluate its DEI policies in light of all these developments, as well as your executive comp program.
And also your governance guidelines, right? A lot of times the disclosure in your proxy statement on what is considered when you're determining a nominee for the board is based on what's in your governance guidelines for that.
And as you mentioned that, another thing comes up, your compensation committee charter. Mm-hmm. Take a look at that, because now I don't run into too many that say, you know, DEI or ESG is strictly within the province of the comp committee, but that is an area where there might be something that you want to make sure, if you're looking at this holistically, that you've thought about that too as part of the process.
Yeah. Excellent comments. And it makes me think of like three frequently asked questions that relate exactly to this, Mark and Maj. That what we're hearing is, believe it or not, like number one, right? So it's the Rooney rule, right? So like having more diverse candidates, not necessarily the outcome of it, but the process of it. And so just to be clear for those listening on Valentine's Day, Rooney rule type programs are not per se illegal. And so disclosing them, though, however, then could give rise to someone saying, well, if you have that, could that actually, you know, that might be the inference towards actually ending up with different decisions than you would have been had you not had it. So that's the only sort of, I guess, you know, whatever you want to call it, political risk, but it is not per se illegal. And I want to make it clear. However, people are looking at that and trying to weigh all of the different risks and how they flow out and all of the different documents that Maj and Mark talked about. Yes, all the charters and the compensation, the corporate governance guidelines, that's going to be important. Taking it one step further, we've actually had just a few clients, not every client, but asking like, well, with all of this and, you know, sort of those acronyms we've been talking about coming out of favor in the current environment, should the NomGov committee or the other committee, or God forbid the full board, not no longer think about ESG? I wanted to ask this question and mention that it was asked because it's important. Given that we're having this conversation, ESG risks are more important than ever. If DEI programs are actually going to change as a result of these changes in disclosure, does that impact business strategy? So I would argue the opposite. The fact that this is happening makes it more incumbent on the board to discharge their fiduciary duties to the corporation and to their investors to be thinking about this. So I would implore not taking that out. However, obviously I'm biased there. Finally, we've been getting the question, as Mark mentioned, about ESG reports, and you know, they get cross-referenced in proxies and sometimes some of that language actually gets like picked and put in the proxy. Some of our clients are asking, you know, and there was a time, let's I guess like roll back 5 years ago, where companies were very, and they still are, very focused on the sequencing of, okay, 10K out first, ESG report out first, so we can kind of like enhance our ESG ratings and then get the proxy out there. We are getting the question now, should we hold off on our ESG report? And that's, you know, a strategic question to decide, but that is an important one that maybe, you know, companies listening should think about. Some are actually cranking it out now in Q1 because they've promised that, and some investors are waiting for that. And in fact, that's the audience, and, you know, they should get what they've been promised. However, if there is some wiggle, some are waiting until after May. We've mentioned this executive order that came out in January, and it does say within 120 days, federal agencies are, you know, kind of urged to put together a list of companies that may be engaging in so-called, quote, illegal DEI activities. So some are waiting until after that May date and then kind of putting out the reports in June, July, August. And that is the cadence for a lot of companies anyway, to put it out in the summertime. So I throw that out there. That's the timing questions out there.
One last thing that I want to raise, and it's funny because each time the three of us talk, we come up with more and more issues that we think are worth considering, even though we don't have a definitive answer for them. And that is, one of the questions I get to is, how will this impact my 2025 incentive compensation program? And the good news is that if you haven't set your 2025 goals, well, then you can take this into consideration in determining what you think is going to be appropriate, both in terms of advancing your business objectives and properly motivating or incenting that group of individuals. On the other hand, if you are very efficient and you've already set your goals for 2025, can we go back and change them now? I don't think there's a clear answer to that. And I would certainly recommend to any client of mine, talk to your legal counsel in order to understand what the risks are and in doing something that like that. But my personal view is that, yes, you probably could go ahead, since we're only 5-6 weeks into 2025, make that change. But what I would do is I tend to be very transparent about it. I would basically say, unless, again, you decide it's not material, then, you know, then you wouldn't have to do it. But if it is, I do think people will understand. And it's a story that tells itself. Yes, we had this as a goal, then the political environment changed and the business environment changed. And upon reconsideration, we decided that we didn't want to put this at risk, or this portion of our executives' incentive comp at risk. So that's, I think, the other piece here is we talked about what happens with the plan that you had last year. But at this stage, for most calendar year companies, it's probably still enough time to kind of deal with this for the current plan and going forward.
100% agree with what Mark just said. And I also get the question of, well, we're not quite ready to set our goals. Is there a problem if we wait till March to set our goals for the year? And I think that's fine too. And in terms of changing your goals, look, ISS just changed their policy position as well. So I think there'd be the last entity to have an issue with companies making a change here.
The other question we keep getting from clients is like, should we move quickly? And the answer is no. I think just like be deliberate. This is a pendulum swing. Things could change in 2 years. Things could change in 4 years. And so being very thoughtful and deliberate to the extent and not allowing, I guess, anxiety be your strategy is my best advice.
Yeah, to just kind of reinforce what Betty's saying, you know, there still are a lot of studies out there and many companies who firmly believe that diversity practices are an important element in successful financial performance. So it's not like these things have all of a sudden turned out to be radioactive. I do think it's you're going to have to go through a deliberative process to find out what makes the most sense for your company based on your business, your culture, and sort of the other major issues.
Absolutely. Well, thank you to all three of you, Mark, Maj, Betty. I so appreciate you being here today and talking about this with our audience. And thank you to everyone listening in today. We hope you learned something from this. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.